Hello, everyone. I would like to welcome you all to SACPAW today. It's been a rainy day, so it's good to see you all. I am Patty Johnson, and I'm your moderator for today. Tasers, Rules of Engagement is our title today. It's a very hot topic across the country. We see it every day in the media. And I think the bottom line for many of us sitting here is to say, are we safe? And what's happening here right in our hometown of Lethbridge? I would like to remind folks just a few housekeeping duties to pay for lunch. And there's a basket on the table, and it's $10. And if you could put your money in the basket and delegate somebody to count the money prior to our treasurer picking it up. SACPAW is a volunteer nonprofit organization and relies on the contributions of members and session attendees to continue its work. I'd like to acknowledge our partners, the University of Lethbridge, for distributing notices, and Lethbridge College for posting audio of the session on the SACPAW website. I would also like to thank Country Kitchen Catering for preparing the lunch today. The format for today's session begins with a 20 to 25 minute presentation, and then we break for lunch, and then we return for a question period beginning at 1 p.m. or shortly thereof, and we're closing at 1:30. Our guest speakers today are Chief Tom McKenzie, Sergeant Jason Walper, and Alex Hahn. Tom McKenzie joined the Lethbridge Regional Police Service in 1976, working his way through the ranks and experiencing nearly all aspects of law enforcement in Lethbridge. Tom was sworn in as chief on January 1, 2007. Jason Wappler has been a member of the Lethbridge Police Regional Service for 11 years. He was promoted to sergeant in 2006 and is presently in charge of the police training unit. Sergeant Walfler has been a taser instructor for several years. Alex Hahn is a member of the Lethbridge Regional Police Commission, presently serving as its public complaints director. He served as mayor of Coaldale for three terms in the 1990s. Now a resident of Lethbridge, he has just been appointed to the University of Lethbridge Senate. And with that, I'd like to welcome our guests. And I think, Jason, you're the first one up. Okay, let's warm up.
Good morning. Thank you for having us here. I'm going to get right into this since I've been instructed. I only have about 15 minutes time, so I'm going to get right into that.
Speak up, please.
Yeah. Speak right into the mic.
Okay. First of all, we're going to talk a little bit about, if I can get the technical difficulties worked out, a little bit of the history of the conducted energy device, or the taser as it's being commonly referred to by the public. In 1993, Taser International introduced this device for law enforcement use. In 1994, they developed what was called an Air Taser 34,000, which was basically a device mainly used to control subjects by way of pain compliance. In 1999, they implemented what was called an M26 Advanced Taser. And in 2000, the Lethbridge Regional Police Service implemented the M26 Advanced Taser for use by our first responders on the street. Now, this taser, different from the Air Taser, affected the central nervous system, not just affecting the sensory motor nerves. So it actually took control of the muscles of the body, not just needing pain compliance. In 2003, the X26 was developed and implemented by Taser International, and in 2007, the Lethbridge Regional Police Service implemented the X26 Taser, which is considered a fourth-generation device and a better tool for the law enforcement community. So some of you may not understand exactly what a taser is or what a conducted energy device is. And basically, it's a less lethal device that, when deployed, it propels two probes, which I have some here that you're more than happy to view after the presentation. And basically, attached to those probes are a small wire that allows it to make contact from the device to the subject and penetrates the skin or clothing of the person that is being deployed against and allowing the device to work. It sends out a very short duration, high voltage electrical wave And what that does is it attacks the central nervous system, the sensory nervous system, and the motor nervous system. And it causes uncontrollable contractions of the muscle in the body. It does not rely on pain compliance, as I mentioned in the last slide there. This is what an X26 looks like. I brought a real one here, so again, after the presentation, I'll be more than happy to show you what it looks like. This is basically what it looks like, and you can see the small probes at the far left of the screen there that are actually deployed, and the little wiggly lines are the wires attached to it. The green pieces of plastic there are considered blast doors, they call them, and basically a blast door just holds all those components inside the cartridge when it's being deployed. And those little yellow circles are basically confetti, and those confetti are called aphid tags, and those aphid tags have a little serial number on them that allows Taser International and the manufacturer to track that particular cartridge. Because in the United States and other countries, this thing may be used by other members of the public or other services that work close together, this allows them to track which cartridge is used by which service. So we could realistically go to Taser International with one of those yellow pieces of paper and say, was this ours? And they'll be able to tell us whether or not it was. So a quick comparison between the two devices that we implemented. The new X26 is about 60% smaller and lighter than the old one. And the reason for that is they developed a different way of transmitting the energy through the body, and it's called a pulse wave technology rather than what's called a blunt technology. So pretty much what that means is they create a gap between the probe and the subject, and they keep that gap open rather than having to bridge it every single time. So I don't know if there's any electricians out there, but they hopefully will understand what I mean. And basically they keep that opening there, so it allows all the rest of the energy to flow through, which allows it to be smaller, more compact, and they don't need a larger battery pack. So for our service, those people that are allowed to use it are usually trained at the recruit level. In fact, all of our recruits for the last 4 to 5 years have been receiving what we call basic certification training. That training for us is about an 8-hour-long presentation, which includes safe handling procedures, our specific policy in regards to its use and deployment. It includes scenario-based training. It includes practical application, target acquisition, all kinds of things incorporated into an 8-hour learning environment. After that point, and also there's a written examination and a practical examination. Once they've received their user certification, every single year we require them to recertify in the safe handling procedures, its use, its policy, and the practical and scenario-based training every year. Just in contrast to the Solicitor General in Alberta, who authorizes us to have these devices, their requirement and their standards that set out when and how we use it dictate that we must use this and we must train this every second year. So we're exceeding the guidelines set out by the province and going one step further because we know it's important and because it's a valuable resource and because we understand that to be good at something, you have to train with it regularly. So we've increased that by making it an annual thing. So the next slide, I guess, is just why and when it's used, which I guess is the topic for today. For our service, it allows us to use a tool but keep a distance away from a subject. It allows us to stay at a safe distance for those people that may be in possession of weapons or that may be in possession of a fist that wants to cause some physical harm to us like nobody else, which I'm sure you can appreciate. The uniform, unfortunately, doesn't stop some people from feeling they have a right, so that allows us to keep a distance. It avoids any type of contamination issues, and when I talk about contamination issues, what I'm referring to is we also carry OC spray or pepper spray, which is commonly referred as, and with those type of tools, there's always a decontamination issue because you're spraying a substance on their face, and fortunately, it tends to make the mucus start to run, if you know what I mean. They get quite a runny nose and things like that. So it's important that you understand that With this device, we don't have to worry about contamination issues, which is quite important, and can take a quite considerable amount of time, depending on the individual involved. I mean, personally, myself, it took me well over an hour before I was capable of doing anything after I was sprayed with OC spray, so it's not something that's enjoyable either. Regardless, there's a lot of opinions out there about the side effects and the results of using this thing on the human body. At this time, there's been no proven permanent side effects to its use. There's less chance of physical injuries for members as well as for the subjects and other citizens involved, which is probably the most important aspect. At the end of the day, our officers want to go home safely just like everybody else. And unfortunately, they're drawn into the situations that many people aren't just by their duties. So when 2 o'clock in the morning, when our officers are called to go and deal with a fight on the street between two individuals or somebody who unfortunately is emotionally disturbed at that point in time and wants to take their own life with a knife, our members have to go there. They can't run away. So they get to the scene and they have to deal with what they have at that particular moment in time. And it's important for them to be able to have the tools that give them as much safety as possible. And not to mention batons, which we also carry, which is a nightstick in essence. Using those types of tools, there's a greater chance that there's going to be some serious damage caused to the human body by breaking bones, things like that, by the use of striking somebody with basically a metal bar. There's some of the things the officers take into account when they're deciding which option to use. And the last point on the slide there, providing an alternative to lethal force. It's very important to understand that this tool isn't meant to replace a pistol or a shotgun or a rifle that may be used by the law enforcement people. It's not meant to replace that. But used in conjunction with that, it's a very viable tool to a lethal force situation or a deadly threat. Somebody in possession of a knife or a gun or a pipe or a 2x4, if we have this option available as well as a pistol available, hopefully we can use this device and not have to resort to using a firearm. When we use this, our policy with Lethbridge Regional Police Service basically is this slide in a nutshell, 3 pages broken down into one. The officers can deploy this device on those people that they believe are a danger to themselves, others, or the officer, and that they need to be immediately controlled. And that's an important part of this. Although they are a danger to themselves, the officer has to step back and assess this situation, which sometimes they only have a couple seconds, and say, do I have to control this person now, or can I step back and reevaluate? Moving on to the third part of that, the officer has to understand whether they're going to be resistant or assaultive towards that officer, somebody else, or themselves, and that's an important part of that as well. They also have to look at whether or not other force options would be more appropriate, or that they wouldn't be, or they would just be ineffective. Spraying OC spray in a room full of people may not be a suitable option, because if we were to spray OC in this room, one person may be the subject of that spray, but most people would be affected in some way for that. So it's not a viable option in as far as our training is concerned. And obviously the last point is that grievous bodily harm or a deadly threat. That's an option for us at that point. So it's important to understand that those ands between every one of those statements are important, that these are not all by themselves. They're in conjunction with each other. They need to be controlled. They're a threat to themselves or others. Other methods are inappropriate or ineffective. And that's when the officer is going to make that determination. And usually this happens in 2 seconds. Reporting, quickly, we have a really extensive reporting process with our service. Anytime this thing is used, whether it's pointed, whether it's used and deployed from a distance or in close, they're responsible for filling out a use of force report, it's called. This is submitted to their supervisor, who reviews it. It's then submitted to the staff sergeant in charge of that area at that particular time. He reviews it. It's then given over to myself in charge of training, and I give it to one of the instructors in this area, who reviews it. Then I review it. Then when I'm done reviewing it, I give it to our executive, and so that means all of our inspectors and our chief of police reviews every single one of these. In 2007, just to give you an idea of how much we're actually using this thing, we used it 14 times in 2007. Of that 14 times, six of those were just merely pointing it. Six were deploying it from a distance, and two were in what's called a drive stun, where it's close quarters, and it's a close quarters altercation where there's a physical struggle in close, and they're actually touching it on the skin. Now, when you break that down into the actual amount of contact it is with the public, you can see it's less than 0.05% of the incidences that we responded to, and this is actual calls for service, where we had to use this thing. We had 28,000 plus reported calls for service, and we used this 14 times as a presence or deployment. And obviously that's a very small percentage of the time. 28,000 calls for service would be the actual calls from the public or a citizen asking for our assistance in whatever manner that is. And that's reported to us, and those are the statistics we hold. Now, that doesn't include where the officers out there in the general public, like, for example, myself and the chief today, interacting with you. Well, there's no reported capturing of this interaction with you all today, although, as you can see, I've interacted with many of you already this morning. Some of the current research and findings that are out there right now, it's very important to understand that we're always open to review. We're always open to talk about this and find out what's going on out there with this device today. The Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police has asked the Canadian Police Research Council, which is a national database, to review this in 2007 to give us a great understanding of what this device is. The fiasco inquiry in Edmonton was an inquiry a couple years ago where the provincial court's judge found that the taser, which was deployed on an individual in Edmonton, and he died on the way to the hospital, that person, the cause of death was not attributed to the taser. And that was a very important finding in Alberta for us. Taser International in the city of Akron in just this past month had a lawsuit in the United States, although it is in the United States, it's still irrelevant to our talk today, and that they actually had a medical examiner ruling of three deaths that they attributed to taser overturned and stricken from the record, which is important. Finally, the Dzanski inquiry in Vancouver Airport, which is, the cause of a lot of media attention. We're waiting to see the results of that so we can review the recommendations, if any, from that inquiry, so we can make sure that our policies and procedures are in line with what that comes out of that as well. So with that, I'm going to close, and thank you for listening to me this morning. And again, after lunch, I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have along with the chief.
Alex? Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and afternoon. Thank you for inviting us out today. The Lethbridge Regional Police Commission provides the civilian oversight. Is that better? Provides a civilian oversight to the Lethbridge Regional Police Service. We take that very seriously. After all, we are civilians providing oversight and trying to keep the department trying to find a word and it's gone. I'm sorry. Anyway, we try to keep things on a above board level with everything, and but we take it very seriously. We take this taser as a very serious tool that our department has. We provide and make sure that the policy and procedure is followed to the letter, and are convinced and are confident that it is. When you seen the slide that talked about 14 times it was taken out, and actually only used 8 of the 14 times, I think that speaks very highly of the people that are using it, that they are very careful in what they're doing with it. I personally have been tased when I was mayor of the town of Coaldale. We bought the equipment for the town police at that time, and as a commission decided that if we were going to allow this to be used on the public, that we ought to know what it actually does. And we did the same thing with pepper spray. When we bought new guns, we didn't really think that we needed to go that far, but I did. And I'm a big man. They taped it to me. They didn't actually shoot me with it, and asked me to run. I got about four steps. They pulled the trigger. I dropped. There was nothing I could do. I absolutely dropped. I can't imagine fighting through it. There would have to be something else going on in your body that could drive you to fight through the shot of that taser. And to me, it was very important to know that. And there was no side effects. I had to sit on the floor for a few minutes to get my breath and to get, I didn't think my legs would ever work again, but I got them going. And really, there was no side effects other than the, you know, getting up for the first time afterwards. So we feel that it's used appropriately. It's a safe product to use at this point. And until we can get evidence otherwise, that is the position of the Lethbridge Regional Police Commission. I think I'll just turn over to the chief if he's got any more.
So I'd just like to echo Mr. Owen's comments and say thank you very much for having us out here. I think it's important as communities that we take the time to understand what's happening, and our service is really committed to providing safe communities. That is our mission. We're more than pleased to come out at any time and talk to anyone about the policies and the procedures of our service, the tools we're using, and what we do. We're not going to share trade secrets of investigations with you, perhaps, but things like this that are open and public, we do have procedures and policies set out for them. That's available for anybody to view. And I'm always more than happy to come out and talk about our service and the professional young men and ladies that conduct themselves very well. I think 14 uses speaks highly that we're not just out using it, we're not threatening people with it, we're not bullying, and I can tell you that would not be tolerated. If an officer finds himself in that position, or is he is found to do something like that, he will be held accountable through our discipline, and perhaps even a criminal charge will find him in court. It's not something that we're opposed to. In fact, it's there, and as Alex has said, the commission holds us accountable, the SOLGEN holds the commission accountable, and they all hold me accountable, and I hold our services accountable. I accept complete responsibility for the use of the taser. It is an instrument that our service uses as the chief. I support it totally, 100%. I can tell you that the medical research is out there and not exact, but it's out there and not exact on a lot of different conditions, I guess, that are there. Arguments of excited delirium happen. Excited delirium is not a condition, it's a symptom. If you go to the emergency and complain about a stomach ache, it's not the stomach ache that killed you. It's the bleeding ulcer. It's the appendix bursting or those things. It's a symptom of it. A delirium exists. It's well documented. And a delirium can come on about many reasons, whether it's a psychosis, whether it's an abuse of alcohol. The delirium might be less agitated, so you might pass out. You're in a state of delirium. You're not functioning. You're not thinking. When it's excited, you're running around. And we train our officers very much about excited delirium syndrome. And it often presents itself in the way of a man running half-naked down the street, somebody jumping through windows, exhibiting extraordinary strength, five or six officers tackling him. Before the conducted energy device, before the taser, when I first started policing in 1976, I wore a Smith & Wesson revolver with six bullets. I didn't have any extra bullets. I had a heavy leaded wasp stinger on a nightstick, and I had my fists. I'm very proud of the aspect that throughout my career I could probably count on my hands, on both my hands, the number of times I was in a physical confrontation. I'm blessed. I'm a little bit bigger, and it's a smaller community, and we have the respect of our community. It's important to us. So that's why we're open and accountable and transparent. In the course of my career, I've seen officers break wrists. I've seen officers break ankles. I've seen officers separate shoulders, and I've seen that happen to the offenders that we're arresting as well. Believe it or not, we are there to protect the offender, we are there to protect the community, and we're there to protect the victim. That offender has rights just like everybody else, and if we're abusing his rights and we're using excessive force, we should be held accountable, and we are held accountable for it. This is a tool that allows us. I'm aware through my review of the incidences of situations where we responded to suicidal persons. Those suicidal persons have actually cut their wrists. We've tased them, prevented them from completing the act, saved their life, and taken them to hospital. I've been unfortunately involved in my career with a fatality that occurred because of a hostage taken. The individual shot to death right in front of me. If I would have had a taser, I probably could have prevented that. But you know what? That was 78, and we don't know about that. It's possible that he still could have been shot. And will we end up shooting somebody? I hope not. That is the worst nightmare for any police officer, for any police service. It's not our intent to harm anybody. We provide safe communities. We do that in a way that deals with public safety. We do it so that we can gain your trust and your confidence, and we do it professionally, and our members are held accountable for that. We review these incidents. The sole agenda is clearly set out. Guidelines that he wants us to follow. He clearly supports the taser. We are constantly reviewing this, and should there be more evidence come out to show that this is a very dangerous weapon, you can bet we'll get rid of it. I just wanted to draw an analogy. If you're building a home and the wall falls down, you don't go over to the work site and throw the hammers out, you fire the carpenter. And that was what's going to happen here. When our officers are using a tool, they're held accountable for that use. It's not to be used just haphazardly. They are accountable, as you've seen, through reporting. They have training that sets out when they will use it, and it is to provide for the safety of the offender, the officer, and our communities, and that's very, very important to us. We take it very seriously. So I want to assure you that it's not treated as a light matter. Each incident is reviewed, training is provided, and the idea is safety. It's actually not to cause harm. We're not here to hurt anyone. So thank you very much for allowing us to be here this afternoon, and we're pleased to answer any questions after lunch, I think.
Okay, folks, thank you very much for our presenters, and now we'll have lunch. So do enjoy.